Wendy, name this tune.
I just know I like it. I'm grooving to
can
it.
Can you do it?
No.
I didn't name the band.
All right, the band's name starts with a country. Wendy, does that help at all?
No.
We talked about it on Monday or Tuesday upstairs. Steve, go ahead. The band is?
Portugal the Man.
Portugal the Man. Do you know why it's called that?
I don't. I don't think either. Are they from New Zealand or something?
Yeah,
too?
I think they're not from Portugal.
No, I don't
it's
think
very
they
misleading.
Are.
Very misleading.
I want to be called Berwin the Girl.
Like you haven't.
Just for a year, I lived there.
That's a so catchy name. That's a very catchy name. Steve, what has to happen? Wendy and I discussed this during the bonus hour. It's the important conversation that goes on during the bonus hour on the stream from 12 to 1 o'clock. What has to happen for something to go from cold to bitter cold? What's the line of demarcation? Yeah, when do you say it's bitter cold?
10 degrees below normal.
Is that when it's bitter cold?
It is to me. I just made that up, but it's bitterly cold today.
Remember when they had Mass for the shut-ins on Sundays, and sometimes you'd get stuck watching it because there really wasn't anything on before Tiny Tove and the Magic Door?
Thanks for the reference, yes.
You're welcome.
Yes.
I feel like I am completely shut in. I really do. Again, today is 4 weeks. My knee is 4 weeks old. I have turned a corner. I'm doing very, very well.
Nice.
Not using a cane or anything else anymore. Just limping a little. But it's too cold to go out. I have to go to therapy, but that's it.
Oh, you've got therapy today?
Physical therapy, not mental. That's another day.
You're doing so well. Get out in the cold. The rest of us are.
You know, for a second, it feels good because you go, I can handle this. And then after a while, your brain goes, nah, you really can't. You got to go inside.
See, you're choking up about
it. I get all scared thinking about it. This morning, as I'm walking, because I love that river walk, you know. So I go from Ogilvie Station here and I take the river. I walk along the river. And every day, there's less and less people. Today, there were six people on the whole river walk.
Wow.
And then you look over at the river and it's just chunks of ice right now. And it looks like... Like, for a second, you fool yourself and you go, I could walk across this if I wanted to. I could
Please
just walk
don't.
Across this. No, I'm smarter than that. Not a lot smarter, because I there was a moment where I go, I could do that. I could just walk across the river. That'd be
and
fun.
And it would save you some time.
Yeah. Except by the time they fished me out of the river, you end up losing time.
Well,
Steve, what were
you
going
to
say?
I'm lucky enough to drive lately, and so I really feel for commuters who are waiting for a bus or you walking. But
yeah.
Got into the parking lot this morning, and I answered emails and tweeted for 10 minutes before I was ready to get out of the warm car and walk the 50 feet into the building.
Because it'll make a difference.
Reading something yesterday, if you do have newer cars, and you can get these installed on older cars, we have an old car and a new car, the remote starters are something created in heaven.
It's the best thing you could ever buy in your life.
Love it.
It is fantastic. If you do have an older car, like I said, you can have it installed, a few hundred dollars. It is the best thing. And now I'm reading something in the news that's just a waste of gas and a waste of time. I think not.
It doesn't use up that much gas.
I don't even care if it does. As long as it's warm when I get in there, who cares?
So, Wendy, I come in, so early in the morning. So
yeah.
I'm up in my bathroom. So I turn on my remote starter from my upstairs bathroom.
Yeah.
Point it towards, my car's in the garage.
Yeah.
And I still turn it on, but I do it in between my curling of my hair and my makeup.
Yep. Mary.
And by the time I have time perfectly, Steve. By the time I get in there, I'm good.
I do exactly the same thing. I turn off the bathroom light and then hit the switch. It's the best feeling when I can see the lights go on in the driveway.
Yes. It's a miracle.
I have mine on now, and my appointment for physical therapy is until 3:30.
Your car's going to be beautiful when you get in there. I got one about, the first one I had was about 7 or 8 years ago when they weren't commonplace. Like now it's very commonplace to have these remote starters, but when I got mine, it was a very new thing. So when I was working at WLS at the time, and it had a 2 mile startup, I could be 2 miles away from the car and press it. And that's what I would do. Like as the show was coming to an end this time of year, I'd press the button. By the time I got to the car, it was nice and warm. But twice, two different times when I got to my car, there was security guards completely surrounding the car because they thought something nefarious was going on. But it was just a starter. I wasn't doing anything crazy.
Mine's not super reliable. That's why I have to... Because I have to hit the button twice.
They're all like that, aren't they?
The second time is longer than the first.
Yeah, 5 seconds you're supposed to.
Yeah.
Mine does it right away. But it turns the car off when I open the door.
Oh, it does.
I don't know. I don't understand. I guess so no one would steal it.
Yeah. Right? Isn't that why?
No, it should stay on unless you touch the brake or the...
No, it doesn't. If I have it warming up and the kids go to get in the car, it turns off.
Do you have to put, is your car a push button start once you
yes.
get in? Yeah.
Did they hook it up
Do the kids open the door first?
Yeah.
That might be it.
Yeah, sometimes when you open the passenger door first.
No, even when I open the driver's side, it just turns off. So then you have to get in and start it again manually.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
That's rough.
You need a mechanic.
But we're all in agreement of all the things you could possibly buy in your lifetime. If you live in a climate like this, that's the best purchase of your life, isn't it?
Sometimes seeing that light flicker in the morning is the best part of my day.
And you can turn the AC on in the summer, too. This is only my second year having the remote start, so
yeah.
I love it.
Oh, it's the best thing. It's the best thing.
I wish I had a remote start for me. You could start me up early,
so
Bill.
For a few moments before you got up, I would have to just press a button, and your mind would already be like simmering, right?
My mind's always on.
Oh, it is.
It's hard to shut that thing off.
I want to play some audio for you. Jez, do we have the audio of the lady? I know that sounded like Jerry Lewis.
Hey, lady.
Do we have the lady? Yay.
I miss him.
All right. So here is, we all miss him, Steve. Try to guess what this lady is experiencing. Try to guess. We'll just play a couple of moments and try to, she's very emotional. I'm going to warn you right now. The lady you're about to hear is extremely emotional. Try to figure out by her emotions what she's experiencing. Okay, listen to this. All right, now that goes on for another hour and 6 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Sounds like a remote start.
You think, Steve, that you're going to go with remote start?
Yes.
Mary, you want to take a chance first?
Like she's being attacked by a dog.
Attacked by a dog, maybe? Wendy, what is your guess?
My guess is that's the sound of someone who won a lottery ticket.
Oh.
A lottery ticket.
All right, you're not exactly there, but you're very, very close. That is a lady named Lauren May, who is playing a game called HQ Trivia that I never heard of until last week. I've still never played it, but one of my daughters, my daughter Kylie, knows I love trivia. And she goes, Dad, how do you do on this HQ Trivia game? I had never heard of it. So she told me it's like an online version of Jeopardy. You play against people all over the world, and whoever gets the most right wins the most money. That lady, Lauren May, just won on HQ Trivia. She plays it every day. She finally won. Guess how much money she won?
$30.
$30? $11.30.
What? And
come
that's
on.
How she reacted?
Yes. Yes. That lady just won $11.30. Jez, play her again. Play a little bit of Lauren May as she wins $11.30. Now, what would happen if Lauren won the big lottery that's going on right now?
She would have dropped dead.
She'd be dead.
She doesn't get out much.
Is she married because her husband really has an easy job?
The easiest job in all the land. All right, let's take a quick break, and then there's more show. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. You can call us there or remote start us, if you like. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about what we consider to be the greatest invention of all time, the remote car starter, especially on days like today. The weather's been a little bit cold. Why not get your car a little bit heated up by the time you get in it? Wendy, a caller has some help for you. Jim is on the line. Hello, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. Good, good. Nice and warm. Staying cozy.
Good.
A few things about your starters that I think you should know is it has an anti-theft thing so that once you remotely start it and it's running, if somebody sees a car sitting there running and want to decide to get in and take a free ride, the minute they touch that handle, it'll kill the car or it'll set the alarm off.
Well, some cars,
mine does.
Wendy, yours does that.
Yep.
My car, the key has to be within, I think it's 2 feet or 3 feet of the car, preferably inside the car, but it's activated when I get within 2 feet of the car.
Oh, okay. The other thing is about the remotes is the battery. Once the battery starts to get a little weak, you have to get a new one. You can get them at Walgreens or Radio Shack. I don't think they have Radio Shacks anymore. But there was one other thing with them that I was trying to remember. Oh, to learn your code. In other words, if you're in your car for some reason and you start it with remote that's running and you don't have your keys in, or for some reason you lose your keys, the only way you're going to be able to get that car started without the remote is to know your code. So wherever the panic button is for your car, learn your code. You got to look at the book, and it'll tell you press the button for 30 seconds.
Wait, where would you? What? Let's say I knew my code. Where would you? Where would I put my code?
Your code should be in the information booklet that you got.
No, but like, I mean, what do I do with it?
Like, I think he means the code would be press panic twice and hit something and then stand on your left foot.
On your key fob thing? Is that what it is?
That's a funny word.
No, this will be in your vehicle itself. There'll be a little red button maybe underneath the dash or in the glove box, depending on where they put it. But you should learn that code so that in case you do lose your fob, you can still get in your car and with a valet key and start it and stuff.
Oh, all right.
Well, I told you on your little fob a thing comes out, Bill. Didn't I show you that? There's like a little...
Not for air.
Oh, sorry. There's actually a little key inside your fob.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the deal. But find that code. If you don't have it, depending on if it was factory installed or by an independent company, they can get you that code. But it should be in the little booklet that gives you all the information on it.
How do you know all this stuff, Jim? Are you in the business?
No, I've had hard times with it.
Have you?
Once you get screwed, you learn.
I learned all the riggers and rollers. The car, I had to learn my code. I didn't know that I had to know a code.
Right.
I also found out that we've had a few times where somebody's come up and, like, opened up the door handles. It's like, wait a minute, I had the remote going. What's going on?
Right.
Where you come out, and it sounds like it's in a parade. The lights are going off, and the horn's honking and all of that. And it's like, what's that all about? Somebody tried to... I guess carjack it or steal a car.
Oh no!
Yeah, so that's stuff that you know, and then just learn your codes. That's the main thing.
That's good advice. Solid advice, Jim. Thank you so much. Have a great New Year.
Okay, you too. Good show. You guys stay warm.
Oh, you're the best. Thanks.
Okay.
Did you ever have this, Wendy, where you hear somebody in the neighborhood's car going off, and you just say to yourself, "I wish that idiot would just turn his car off. How long is this going to go on?" And then you realize it's your car.
Yep, happens at least twice a month.
Yeah. I keep my keys in my pocket, and if I bend the wrong way, it sets the car off. It's happened to me about a half a dozen times in the last couple of years.
We have an old Toyota Corolla, and the panic button thing on that is just so touchy. I don't know why. So Jim super glued it.
Oh, did he?
He did, and it's never happened again.
Smart move. Very smart move.
I hope he doesn't need the panic button ever. But
Dave,
Someone has texted, and I'm curious about this too. When Mary Vandeveld said that she starts her car while curling her hair, and the car's in the garage, that concerns me.
Well, funny you say that, because Dave wants to talk about exactly that. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Good morning. Yeah, just with all these electronic starts now on the cars, you push it on, push it off. Problem being is sometimes I've noticed with some senior family members that we have the car running. Luckily, it's been a detached garage, but if it's attached, you're going to wind up with all the carbon monoxide. You've actually come out and, like, the tank has been run dry because it ran all night long.
That is dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, my garage is detached.
So. Oh, yours is
all
okay.
Right, I'm good.
Yeah. All right, well thanks for...
The car could overheat, and, you know, and it's not new with cars heating up. Like, 35 years ago, one of the local high schools, they had, like, 10 cars get stolen in the suburbs, and they all wound up at the high school. And at the end of the day, everybody was leaving, and the cars were still running in the parking lot.
How about that? Wow.
Yeah, well, they recovered all 10 cars. It was kind of like, well, that's nobody wanted to go home. I'll go to school in a cold car.
I guess so. Well, thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
And the remote starts sometimes. I mean, this is my first car that has a button to start.
Yeah.
And when you're first getting used to it, I've had to have Dave Ennett check in the parking lot if I turned my car off.
Even on days off, Dave will come in and make sure your car's running. He goes above and beyond the call, doesn't he?
Yes, I was at a neighborhood Horton's Home Electronics or Home Lighting, and there's a hardware store in the basement. Pulled in the parking lot, and I was kind of eyeing a parking spot, and this guy in a big car was eyeing it as well. Well, I got there like a second sooner, so I wasn't going to give up that spot.
Yeah.
And I, you know, threw down, I pulled in the spot before he could, and then I got out of the car and went shopping, and when I came back out in 10 minutes with my light bulbs, I noticed I left the car on, and he could have really just stolen it or moved it to a different parking spot to get even with me.
Well,
I forgot to turn it off.
So we have a couple texts saying, and I know this is true of my Jeep as well, 708 says, when I remote start my Jeep, it obviously starts it, and then it stays locked until I hit the unlock. No car that has a remote start will work until you unlock it. So there's something to that, right? It'll start the car, but your doors remain locked. It's going to be, I mean, somebody
right,
would
so
have
no
to...
Right, so no one can steal it.
Right. Somebody would have to physically break into the car.
No, mine, I don't have to have the doors locked.
Oh, and, you don't?
No, but again, I don't have I have an actual key. So when I sit down in my car and it's running remotely... if I touch the brake or accelerator, it will shut off.
Oh, it does.
Until the key is
it
in.
Does. It does. Hey, none
so
of us
you
have
can't drive it like that.
No.
None of us have said fob in almost 3 minutes.
God, I love that word.
It sounds like a word you'd call a kid in school if you didn't like him.
A British kid.
A British kid.
Yes.
You know that Nigel, that new kid, Nigel?
He's such a fob.
Kind of a fob, isn't he? I think he is. several people have said, a bunch of people are saying that there are plenty of apps now where you can remote start your car just by using your app, and that has to be true, right? Why wouldn't they have an app like that?
I was just, well, you guys were talking, looking at that to see if I could do that with mine, and...
You can't?
Well, no, there are apps for my car, but I don't know if it's, you have to put something in the car or how it would work, and I'm going to pursue that because that would be more reliable, I think.
But there's also apps. There's
I mean,
apps
you can't
where
just
you can,
buy an app and have it turn it's, your ignition if
it
you don't
just automatically
start.
Starts up, right. Somebody has to install something somewhere. But don't they have that with, I know this is primitive, but I honestly don't know this because I don't have any apps on my phone. I've never downloaded an app. You can like turn lights on and off and stuff on your
sure,
house, right?
Absolutely.
You can check your
Nest
oven
and all that. Yeah,
yeah. You can make sure your ironing board is
change
turned on. The
heat.
Iron is off. Yeah, you can do all that.
That would be great for girls. When you don't know how many times I call home and Jim, did I unplug the curling iron? Could you check? I always do, but you just get nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, do your cars, the way my Jeep is that the gas tank has to be at least a quarter of the way full for the remote start to activate? Is it like that with all cars, or is it just the Jeeps?
I don't know. I never got the
I have a Jeep, and I didn't know that.
How long does it run forever? Because mine will shut off after 15 minutes.
Mine will not.
Oh, it doesn't, Wendy?
I don't think so, although maybe I should leave it and
I mean,
see.
A quarter tank is...
Yeah.
That's a lot of sitting around.
Yeah. Isn't it? I think mine has an automatic shut off after about 8 or 10 minutes because there's been a couple times where I've started it and then I've noticed it's no longer running. But they've got to have some kind of a shut off because you could potentially, you could run out of gas, you know? So there's got to be some kind of a fail safe. The remote start on my Kia only runs for 10 minutes. A couple people here are saying 15 minutes is about theirs.
Hmm.
708 says fob, 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 fob. And British kids all over Chicago were feeling self-conscious about themselves. do not use a remote start in an attached garage. We already covered that. I know that there's, because several people are saying that using these is not a good idea for your car, but I don't know what that, they wouldn't do it if it wasn't a mostly a good idea. I mean, I
well,
know it
yeah,
does.
They would.
It uses up some gas. I get that. Not a lot of gas. But overall, it's a great idea.
I'm all for it.
I wish there were more things that just started just by way of a push button. You wouldn't have to work on it.
You know, they're selling a faucet now, a shower head, that you can program to start.
So really?
That, yeah.
So that the water is warm?
Right. When you wake up, you can walk right into the shower.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, I want that.
That'll save you 8 seconds.
No, well, but depending on where you live, I mean, haven't
mine
you...
Mine takes like 5 to 5 minutes at least to warm up upstairs.
Mine does too. It takes forever.
It depends on the house.
You're right. I shave first, so I turn on the hot water.
Oh, you do?
That brings it up. You're right.
Our last apartment, there were times where it took 5 to 10 minutes to warm up. The house we live in now, it's instantaneous. As soon as you turn it on, it's hot immediately, no matter when. That's why we bought the house. That was the only reason we bought the house, was the hot water immediate.
You're not a fob.
I also have to say, when the weather gets this cold, Wendy, I mentioned this to you once before. In one of our bathrooms, we have kind of a decorative... faucet, which is it's almost like a water fountain faucet, the kind you'd have in grade school. It kind of goes way up in the air. It's not like your regular faucet that just hits the sink immediately. It's more decorative. It's swan-like almost. And this time of year, the water that comes out of that is the coldest water in the world, and it's so much good. It's just, it's so delicious to drink. Like, if my family can't find me this time of year, they know I'm upstairs in the bathroom just drinking water because it's so ice cold and delicious.
You and my dog.
Sometimes he'll be up there with me. It's the only time I'm friends with a dog.
Right.
I'll go, is it me, Steve's dog, or is this water just not the coldest, most delicious water of all time? He just gives me that knowing glance. All right, we're going to break for news, and then after news, you decide, are these the best jokes of 2017 or the worst jokes of 2017? We'll put you to the test. That's coming up after the news. Stick around. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
There's always a joker in the pack. There's always a cardboard clown.
Wendy, do you like to laugh? Let's be honest. Do you like?
Laugh.
Isn't it fun to laugh?
It's good for you. It gives you endorphins.
Yep. Yes, it does. Steve, you enjoy laughter? Do you enjoy laughing every once in a while?
I do love a laugh.
It's
a
Why don't you tell your face that?
I didn't love that. That was
mean-spirited,
right.
Wasn't it, Steve? Was, yeah.
Yep. She's laughing, but...
Guess what I found? I found the top jokes, the best jokes of 2017. Each of these jokes guaranteed to put you into hysterics. If you're driving right now, pull along the side of the road because it gets dangerous. Once you hear these jokes, you'll laugh so hard that all bets are off.
Where did these jokes come from, Bill?
These were selected by joke experts, Wendy, as the top jokes of 2017. They met in Zurich, Switzerland, and they picked the best of the year, and I will tell them to you. Now, what I'd like to do is I'll give you guys the setup, and I want to see if either Steve or you, Wendy, or if Mary's around, if you guys can guess the punchlines. Is that all right?
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Keep in mind, these are hysterically funny jokes. Each one of these is just a laugh riot. All right, the first joke. And these aren't in order of worst to best or best to worst. These are just at random. See if you can guess the punchline. Here's the first joke. These are all very, very, very funny. Why don't they play poker in the jungle? Any guesses? Why don't they play poker in the jungle?
Something with the chips. The chimps.
Are you onto
like
something?
It. Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Wendy, you got anything?
I got nothing.
The correct answer, too many cheetahs.
Oh.
Very funny joke. One of the
hysterical.
Best jokes of 2017.
Are you reading Dixie Riddle Cups?
No, because every time I do it, I get juice on myself.
You're supposed to drink the item
Are you supposed
first.
To drink it first? Because I read the setup, and then when I read the punchline, I get high C on my pants.
That's just high C.
Right, that's all it is. What did the Buddhist say to the hot dog vendor? These are the top jokes of 2017. What did the Buddhist say to the hot dog vendor? This one's very religious. Very spiritual. He said, make me one with everything.
Oh, I like that one.
That one's hysterically funny.
I was going Zen. There's no Zen.
Yeah, me too.
Nope. Nope. What does a zombie vegetarian eat? Anyone?
I guess Mary's not playing.
Mary's
Mary
playing. She's
nothing.
Just disgusted.
I can't. These are so disgusted. Funny. They're beyond me.
They're so funny.
Zombie vegetarian.
Yeah, what would a zombie vegetarian eat?
So not people.
Eat. No.
Not dogs.
Right.
Couscous.
Yes.
It sounds
the
like...
correct answer is couscous.
What is it?
Grains.
Oh,
these are the top jokes. These are the funniest jokes of 2017, ladies and gentlemen. Now, this one I feel bad about because I think they worded it wrong.
You don't feel bad about the other ones?
I feel terrible about the other ones, Steve. Don't get me wrong. I feel bad about each one of these. But this one in particular because this isn't a setup punchline joke. This is just a line. But I think they worded it incorrectly. Tell me if you think so, too. It says, my new thesaurus is terrible. And not only that, it's also terrible. Shouldn't it be my new thesaurus is terrible and it's also awful?
No, the point is that they're giving you the same word
instead of a different choice.
Oh, that's why it's a bad thesaurus.
Right.
I get it.
You have to be smart to enjoy that one.
I don't understand. I don't understand it. I don't enjoy it. I feel bad about myself. I feel like a fob. Why didn't the astronaut come home to his wife? Can you guess this one? This one's kind of easy, actually.
Why didn't the astronaut come home to his wife?
Yeah, is there a reason the astronaut did not come
home? She was mooning someone else.
She's out of this world.
Because he couldn't buy bread and milk?
Ours are all funnier.
He needed his own space.
Come on.
Steve, don't question these. These are the funniest jokes of 2017. It says it right on the headline.
Did Eric Zorn compile these?
Wow. Wow. Not even here to defend himself. This one also is a line. It's not just a set-up punchline. I got fired from my job at the bank today. An old lady came in and asked me to check her balance, and I pushed her over. Jokes.
That could be told well.
Right.
Penny Youngman would have done that.
Right.
Stephen Wright.
Right. He would have been good. Right. Stephen Wright would have been good. Let me try to Stephen Wright. Can I try that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. Where is it? I got fired from. No, I can't do it. My voice isn't up to it. Here's another one of the funniest jokes of 2017. I was going to visit my family this December, but my mom promised to make me Eggs Benedict, so I'm going home for the hollandaise.
Oh, please.
Wendy. Do not question these. They're the funniest jokes of 2017. What did the blanket say when it fell off the bed?
Michael Jackson, you're my dad.
Yep.
Oh, look at that shake.
That's
you.
The one. That was the thing of beauty. I've never been more proud in my whole life.
Thank you.
The correct answer, oh, sheet.
Why does that one? That's my winning one. That's so funny.
You win with that one. You win with that one. All right. Again, if you're just tuning in, these are by far the funniest jokes of 2017. You may have heard other jokes. They're not as good as these. These are the best jokes of the year. This one, again, is a line. It's not a joke. It says, I like to spend every day as if it's my last, staying in bed and calling for a nurse to bring me more pudding.
Well, I think I like some of the one lines.
I guess. All right. How about this one? Why do cow milking stools only have three legs?
Wow. Orion probably knows this.
Only
one.
Orion would get this one. I think Orion would know this one.
There's an udder line in there somewhere.
Why? Yep. Yep. Why do cow milking stools only have three legs? Because the cow's got the udder.
Oh, I thought the udder one fell off.
Oh, you would have got credit for that, Mayor. Okay, I would have given you credit. Again, if you're just tuning in, these are the funniest jokes of the year, 2017.
The answer?
We're hoping, because the cow's got the udder. That's the answer.
Oh, my God.
This one, is Jimmy awake, Wendy? Because I think this one's in Jimmy's territory.
No, everyone's sleeping in this
house.
Are
they still sleeping?
Yeah.
How did Darth Vader know what Luke got him for Christmas?
Oh, my goodness.
He felt his presence.
That's dirty.
That is dirty. I'm gonna strike that one for the record. What's the last thing that goes through a bug's mind when it hits the windshield?
Its brain.
Now it says its backside, but I think its brain is the right answer.
Do they have brains?
Yeah.
No, it's
backside
because
that's the last thing.
That's how you do it in Manuka.
The first thing is the brain. The last thing would be the backside. All right. The funniest jokes of 2017, according to a panel of experts. What did the janitor say when he jumped out of the closet?
And why did he do that?
It's better than a drum.
Mary, you know how...
We're out of the pink stuff.
Oh, the sawdust that you put on the vomit?
All right, once again, the setup. What did the janitor say when he jumped out of the closet?
Who didn't just recall that smell?
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
Thanks for that, Steve.
Did you guys call it magic dust in your school? We called it magic dust.
No.
And Bob Coppers was in charge of the magic dust. He was the janitor at our school. All right. Once again, the setup. What did the janitor say when he jumped out of the closet? The answer, supplies.
That one's hysterical.
That one's funny. That's one of the funniest jokes of the year, Wendy.
So they've taken that from being an ethnic joke to being a janitor
right.
joke.
Right. There was a time where it would have been a different setup. Right. You're right. This one is a lot. Now, the line one, Steve, you seem to enjoy more than the set of punchlines. This one is more of a line. Imagine if Americans switched from pounds to kilograms overnight, there would be mass confusion.
What?
Because it has to deal with mass.
Okay, yeah, no, that's not good.
That's really for scientists. Funny. Only scientists are laughing at that.
And math teachers, you can use that one.
Right. On the first day of school, use that. The kids will love you. It says it's inappropriate to make a dad joke if you're not a dad because it's a faux pas, PA. That's hysterical.
That's a groaner.
That's very funny. What did Batman say to Robin before they got in the car? Robin, get in the car. Oh, my God.
Jeez.
Oh, my God.
He didn't say drat or bam.
No. That's what he said. Robin, get in the car.
Belt up.
If these are the best jokes of 2017, what are the worst jokes of 2017? I have an addiction to cheddar cheese, but it's only mild. People in Wisconsin enjoying that immensely.
I love cheese jokes.
The one-liners, they work
right,
for me.
Right. All right, this is more setup punchline. Why shouldn't you write with a broken pencil? Well, this one's kind of easy. Why shouldn't you write with a broken pencil, Steve?
Something with the lead out or something.
Yeah, you won't make your point.
That's almost it. Good. Because it's pointless. Mm. That's almost the same. Why did the Scarecrow win an award? God.
It was a big...
I have felt guilty delivering each and every punchline, but I think this one makes me feel the most guilty.
Why did a Scarecrow win
something
an...
with crow, something with...
He was outstanding in his field.
Mm. Oh, my God. That is a farmer joke. They ruined it. It's not, you can't just make
right.
a scarecrow. It's a farmer.
There was,
joke.
Right. There, didn't this joke happen like 40 years ago, 50
yes.
years ago with a farmer? And now it's with a scarecrow. I think because farmers complain, Wendy.
And then he yelled, supplies.
All right. This one, I know one of you will get. I know a lot of these have been very challenging, but one of the three of you will definitely get this. But who? Here's the setup. What did the buffalo say when his son left?
Bye, Bill. I don't know.
Ciao?
I don't
know. All right, so Wendy's going with bye, Bill.
I got it. Bye, son.
Bye, son.
Oh,
bye,
darn
son.
It.
Bye, son is the right answer, Steve. Nicely
done. I
worked
at Brookfield Zoo. I should have gotten that one.
You should have gotten
ashamed
that one.
Ashamed of myself.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. If you want more of these, I have more of these. These are
yes.
the best jokes, underline best, the best jokes of 2017. We're trying to figure out the punchline, and we're trying to figure out who in their right mind decided these are the best jokes of 2017. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder.
Are you having a disco party?
I was at a disco party all night, Wendy. I'm just getting in. I haven't even been home yet.
Bill's been at a rave.
I was at the Stay Out Lounge.
Stay out all night.
Yeah, stay out all night.
In Stone Park, right?
Yeah, we had a nice time. We played Panic in the Disco all night long. all right, these are the best jokes according to Best Life magazine. They have put out the best jokes, the top jokes of 2017. So far, I would say they're wrong. Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a couple funny ones.
There's been a couple accidentally funny ones thrown in, but the rest of them are very upsetting to my stomach. I'm going to have Pepto-Bismol as soon as this is over. This is more a line. These, you know, Steve seems to like these more, the lines more than the jokes. It says, I was sitting in traffic the other day. And that's probably why I got run over.
Wow. That is very Stephen Wright.
Yeah, a lot of these are kind of Stephen Wright-y, aren't they? Here's another one that fits under the line category as opposed to set up punchline type joke. Sometimes I tuck my knees into my chest and I lean forward because that's how I roll.
That's funny. And you hate that expression. So that
I do hate that expression. All right. We go back to the classic set up punchline type joke. So far, Steve is winning. He's gotten more correct answers than anybody, but I don't know if that's a sign of a badge of honor or not. I'm not sure it is. Why don't ants get sick? You want to guess this one, Steve?
Why don't ants get sick?
Yeah, why don't ants ever get sick?
Because, well, ants.
Use logic on this one. Here's
so
a hint.
Not a picnic.
No, not a picnic related.
Worker ants?
No.
Because they don't wear pants?
No. No. True, but no. The correct answer, why don't ants get sick? Because they have antibodies.
Oh, boy.
What do you call a fish with no eye? Yes, you got that one right.
What else, Wendy?
You got that right. Are you proud
Thank
of yourself?
You. Yes,
I hope
am.
You are. You should be. Why do you smear peanut butter on the road? Oh, God. Here's the way I'm doing this. I know people can't see me unless you're watching online. I read the setup to myself, and then every time I see the punchline, I feel embarrassed and disappointed at the same exact time. Why don't you smear peanut butter on the road?
I don't know that one.
Because it goes with the traffic jam.
Oh, my G.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Yep. When is your door not actually a door?
When it's a jar.
Oh, yeah. Now, this can't be one of the best jokes of 2017. This is one of the best jokes of, like, 11. This joke is. This was written in biblical times.
Yes, it was. I believe Moses said it.
Moses did it at a
concert.
At a friar's roast for Moab.
And who does a stand-up concert, by the way? I'm sorry about that.
A stand-up concert. You're right. this is more. Now this one's kind of. This I have to say, because so far this is joke number 28, and only three of them have been funny. This one might be funny. I just want to warn people right now. My grandfather has the heart of a lion and also a lifetime ban from the New York Zoo. That's kind of funny. I like that one. Yeah. All right. I don't know. They don't attribute who wrote these, unfortunately. No, actually, it's fortunate now that I think about it, because it's easy to find people now. The next one is, what's green and has wheels? Oh, God. All right. This one is also funny. This is two in a row that's funny. I'm surprised. What is green and has wheels?
I hate to think there's some booger reference to
no,
this.
No, you would think there would be. If you heard the rest of the jokes, you'd be guaranteed there would be, but there is not. Steve, you want to try?
Green with wheels.
What is green and has wheels? Wendy, no try?
Wait.
Oh. It's a pickle thing.
Oh, is right? It?
No.
No?
Okay.
All right, the correct answer? Grass, I lied about the wheels.
I don't get it. I don't think it's funny. It's stupid.
It's manipulative. That's what it is.
Well, explain it.
All right. So just like any formula joke, any set of punchline joke, they ask you the question, you supply the answer. But for this to pay off, it has to both be green and have wheels, but it doesn't because they lied about the wheels.
And how is this funny?
It's a statement on today's society, Wendy, is what it is.
All right.
All right.
Do you have to be a former stand-up comic to enjoy that one?
Yeah.
Steve, did you find that one funny?
I didn't. I'm sorry.
Steve was offended by it.
Yeah,
he was very offended by it. This is a line more than a set-up punchline. A communist joke isn't funny unless everyone gets it. That's kind of funny. My new girlfriend told me that I'm terrible in bed. I don't think it's fair to make a judgment like that in less than a minute. Ouch. What happens to pastors who eat chili dogs? I will warn you, Wendy, this has a religious slant to it. I hope you're okay with that. What happens to pastors who eat chili dogs?
Something involving the pulpit.
Oh,
no.
Actually, that's actually a better answer than their punchline. They have to sit in their own pew. That's not nice.
Oh,
that's not nice.
Boy.
Why can't you hear a pterodactyl go to the bathroom? Oh, no, I'm not doing this one.
Oh, come on.
The pee is silent. That's not funny. Is that funny?
Yeah.
Cosmetic surgery used to be a taboo subject. Now you can talk about Botox and nobody raises an eyebrow.
That's good.
That one's not bad. What do you call someone who immigrated to Sweden? This is embarrassing. What do you call someone who immigrated to Sweden?
Ooh, Swiss Miss. I don't know.
The correct answer on this one, an artificial sweetener.
Oh, my good God.
These are, again, if you're just tuning in, the best of the best, the finest jokes of 2017.
Thank God that year's over with.
Yes. 2018 will be a much better year for humor. Steve, we're going to go to you in about a minute or less. Do we need to go to you now?
We're just standing by. President Trump has just spoken at the White House, and what they do typically now is they speak and then release the audio a bit later, and that's what's happened here. So we are expecting to hear from President Trump in just a minute or two, and we'll hear what he has to say about Steve Bannon in person.
Is that the purpose of today's presser, is to talk about the go-between between he and Steve Bannon?
He was there talking with some Senate Republican leaders, I believe, and then, you know, sometimes they will allow a spray, if you will, that allows reporters to ask him a few questions, and that's what happened today. And, you know, it's the president, I think, also will hear him perhaps talk about the stock market and numbers there and things such as that. because the Dow went beyond 25,000. But in the beginning, I think we talk about Bannon, and that's what we're after.
While we wait for this, really quickly, just personal opinion, did you see this blow up coming between he and Steve Bannon, or was this a surprise?
I think it would be a surprise. I mean, clearly this is the comments from Bannon came in a book. So he made these some time ago.
Right.
It's not as if he said something and the president reacted. Now, you know, the president, according to the White House, was talking to Steve Bannon just earlier last month.
Yeah.
But after the book came out, the president's statement said that Bannon lost his mind after he lost his job.
He lost his job and his mind. Do you make of Breitbart turning on Bannon? I didn't see that coming. That was kind of a surprise.
We'll see what happens. You know, Bannon was on Breitbart radio saying that he is still fully on board with the Make America Great agenda, the Trump agenda. But he clearly had these things to say about Donald Trump that, according to people in the White House yesterday, made the president absolutely furious.
I can't understand Steve Bannon's direction on this because he's still saying positive things about Donald Trump and he seems to support him and want him, he wants him to succeed. However, most of what he's saying is negative. So you're getting both sides of the coin on this. I don't understand what he's shooting for.
He's saying that he's fully behind the Trump agenda.
Yeah.
And that he supports the president. You know, I mean, look, this is what we've gotten from this White House all along.
Yeah.
You know, President Trump said 3 months ago that Steve Bannon was a wonderful guy.
Right.
Now he's saying that he knew that after he fired him that he was insane. So words have never mattered much when it comes to the crowd in power in the White House now. And so I don't think you should be surprised if it's the case for surrogates as well.
And just one more quick question on this. There's been some talk over the last week or two of Steve Bannon potentially running for office of some sort. Is that a reality? Is that something that we're going to see? Or is
I
that
think
not?
Bannon is more interested in finding others to run for office and, you know, to talk
and
to people.
And then he'd back them?
So we're waiting here, and let's see if we can hear from the president now.
Hopefully everything is going to work out very well. We really want it to work out. I can tell you the Republicans want to see it work out very well. If we have support from the Democrats, I think DACA is going to be terrific. We have people that have been working on this issue for a long time. As Lindsay said, as others have said, we really are at a point where I think we could do something spectacular for the people on the border, people coming through. We have to be careful because there's a drug epidemic like the likes of which we've never seen in this country. We need protection. We need the wall. We need all of those things. And frankly, I think a lot of Democrats agree with us. When they see what's happening, when they see the kind of problems we're having at the border, they really understand it. Whether they'll vote that way is another situation, but they really understand it. So we want to thank you all for being here. We have a great spirit going in the Republican Party. I think it can be bipartisan. I hope it's going to be bipartisan. And we can take care of a lot of problems. We can take care of a lot of problems. It would be really nice to do it in a bipartisan way. Okay? Thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't know, he called me a great man last night, so, you know, he obviously changed his tune pretty quick. All right, thank you all very much. Thank you. I don't talk to him. That's just a misnomer. Thank you.
Thank you.
So not much there, Bill.
Not much.
No, we were hoping for a little bit more, but the president, again, pointing to what you did, said, Bill, that, you know, Bannon was complimentary to him just last night.
I can't. It's very alarming. I can't figure it out. I don't understand Bannon's reasons for, like I said, he's playing both sides of the coin. I don't know what he's getting out of that. Is it just to sell books? If it's to sell books, I get it.
It's not his book. He's quoted in this book. It's written by, I believe, a guy named Michael Wolff. I think that Bannon wants, you know, he is interested in reforming the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And, you know, tearing
and making
it
more extreme.
In tearing down the establishment Republican Party. He's interested in supporting candidates around the country that will do that. So he wants to be the firebrand. I guess that's part of it. He also, look, we all want to be the person that someone comes to say what's really going on or what you think. And he did some of that. But the point, too, about this story, it shouldn't get lost, is it's not just Bannon's comments. This book cites a wide range of presidential advisors at the very top who say some very disparaging things about the president.
Interesting.
Bannons are the most identifiable, I guess.
Yep, yep. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve will give you the news, and then Dean Richards comes by. Stick around. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, you sounded like you were going to cry at the end there. It gets emotional sometimes,
well,
doesn't
it? Who wouldn't want to cry?
It gets. Sometimes you just need to cry. That's all you can do. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Paul Sorvino, by the way, is speaking out about his daughter Mira's situation. Did you hear any of his comments, Wendy?
I did, but I was kind of shocked it took this long for him to come forward.
I swear to you, I don't know if you'll remember this, but when her name first came into this, so at the time, two actresses were named. It was Ashley Judd and Mira Sorvino, and they were alleging that both these actresses' careers were hurt because they wouldn't sleep with Harvey Weinstein. They were blacklisted, essentially. There was a list of movies that both these actresses were up for. The Lord of the Rings movies were one of them. I'm trying to remember what the other movies were. There were some comedies listed. And evidently, Harvey Weinstein, although he denies it, he put out the word to the directors and the producers of these films that these women were unreliable and that you wouldn't want to hire them for your projects. And because of that, both of their careers suffered. So I don't know if you remember, but when this story first came out, I said, isn't it weird that her father, who's been in the business for 60 years, he wouldn't come out and say something? Well, finally, he spoke, and he was not happy with the situation. TMZ caught up with him. Again, this is Paul Sorvino, the great actor Paul Sorvino, talking about the situation between Harvey Weinstein and his daughter Mira. Listen to this.
What was your thoughts when you heard about Harvey Weinstein derailing your daughter's career by actively trying to blacklist her from Hollywood?
If I would answer you, I might put everybody in jeopardy. But if I meet him on the street, he ought to hope that he goes to jail. Because if we come across, I think he'll be lying on the floor somehow, magically.
Funny you should say that. So today, let me get that.
Help me there.
Today, we actually reported that the DA is making strides in their case trying to bring criminal charges to Harvey Weinstein.
He's going to go to jail.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. That son of a... Good for him if he goes, because if not, he has to meet me, and I will kill the... Real simple.
Wow. Have a good one.
All right, thanks.
What do you think, Wendy?
I don't think you should say you're going to kill someone.
No. The best way to do it is to not say you're going to kill somebody, but if you're him... A very passionate man, very proud of his daughter and what his daughter has achieved. I can understand where in the heat of the moment, and he's had time to think about this. It's not like he's just finding out about this now. This has been going on for over a month now with his daughter's name in the middle of this. I can understand him getting a little passionate and saying, I'd take care of business if I ran into this guy somewhere.
But what isn't that a threat? Can't that be taken as a threat?
Yeah, it can be. It is a threat. It's the definition of a threat. It's exactly what it is, a threat. I mean, the odds of him running into him at this point are very, very slim. But, yeah, if he ever did something physically to him, if he ever ran into him somewhere and did do something, all you have to do is point to this tape as evidence and go, he said if he ever saw him, he was going to knock him out. He said he was going to kill him.
I totally get it, though.
I 100% get it. You know, his daughter went into a very difficult line of work. You know, she wanted to be an actress. It's a very, very tough road. He knows that. He's been doing it for years. So all of a sudden, he finds out that his daughter's career was thwarted, was stopped because she wouldn't sleep with this high-powered producer. Why wouldn't he be upset?
Man, oh, man.
Very angry. Now, here's a quick question. On Sunday, the Golden Globe Awards are going to be on. Seth Meyers is hosting the Golden Globe Awards. How do they do that? How does he go up there for the monologue? This is the first major award show that's taken place since the big harassment scandal in Hollywood. So it has to be addressed, but how do you do that in a way that's both pleasing to the audience, but at the same time respectful of all the women who suffered? How do you do that?
Do you do it in the sense like, I don't think we'll be hearing any thank yous to Harvey Weinstein tonight or something like that, where it's brought up, but it's just kind of pushed under the rug a little bit?
I wonder. You almost have to. Remember a couple of years ago when Chris Rock hosted the Academy Awards, and for about a month and a half or 2 months prior to the awards, it was made clear that this was the whitest Academy Awards of all time, that no African Americans had been nominated for director, for best actor, for best actress, all the major categories. It was basically just white people. That was it. So Chris right. Rock was hosting, and there was the same kind of talk.
Job with that.
He did a fantastic job of it because he called it out immediately. He ran with it. He was respectful of the situation, but at the same time, he didn't hide it. So does Seth Meyers, and not only Seth Meyers, but Jimmy Kimmel is hosting the Academy Awards this year. It'll still be a major story by the time we get to the Academy Awards. There's other award shows. If you're hosting those award shows, how do you find that balance, you know?
I don't know, and you can't not say something. Don't you have to address it?
Right. If you were hosting one of these award shows and you just completely didn't mention it at all, everybody who saw the show goes, wait a minute, the biggest story in Hollywood this year was not the movies, was not the television, it was this sexual harassment scandal. You owe it to us to comment on it, good, bad, or indifferent. It has to come up. It is the elephant in the room. You have to mention it, right?
But how do you do a joke about that?
That's the trick, is trying to find a way to mention it, still be respectful, but still follow the tradition of that being a fun evening, which is so tricky when it's something that's so not fun. You know, there's nothing funny about sexual harassment, but somehow you have to find a way. You have to find certain guys. I mean, Weinstein is one of the most obvious because he's always mentioned at those award shows. So you have to do, you said, you have to at some point throw his name in there. It has to be done. But when it comes to like the guys like Kevin Spacey, do you do a Kevin Spacey joke at one of these award shows? It's really tough.
It is hard enough to host this anyway, because you know, Seth Meyers has such a tough job. Anyone hosting that, because this is Hollywood sitting in front of you.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And for these particular circumstances, this is almost an impossible gig. If I was Seth Meyers, I would quit. Right. I would bail.
Just jump ship.
Sorry, something came up. Got the flu.
You know, the other thing to take into account is in Hollywood right now, there's a lot of infighting. Not with the big names that we've mentioned because they're involved directly in the sexual harassment scandal, but there's a lot of finger pointing to some of your biggest name stars, to names like Matt Damon and Meryl Streep. There's other stars calling them out saying, look, you were close to these situations. You had to know something was going on and you owed it to the Hollywood community to do something. You're very powerful and you didn't do anything. Matt Damon's in this new Ocean's 11 spinoff movie, and there's people who want his scenes removed from the movie, saying he's one of the most irresponsible guys to know this sort of harassment was going on and not do anything. Meryl Streep is on posters for her new movie about the Washington Post, and people are writing the words "she knew" on the movie posters as if to say, don't go see this movie. Meryl Streep is in it. Meryl Streep kept this cover-up going. So you're in a room now in Hollywood where there's all this finger pointing and name calling. So there's going to be some tense moments there.
I may be naive in all this, but say I had a manager who was helping me with my radio career.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden something broke and he or she was in trouble for something like this. I wouldn't necessarily know about this. It's like they represent me or they're working for me or doing something for me. I don't know what they do in their off time.
But wouldn't you be, if you were one of those bigger name stars that was working with him on a fairly regular basis, you would certainly hear rumblings of these stories. There's no way you could have that close of a business relationship with a guy. Since you brought up radio, you know there's been people in radio where there's been stories about certain people. You hear those stories, right? So I guess it depends on how close you are to that person to at some point confront them and say, hey, look, you and I have a business relationship. I'm just curious. I hear these stories about you. Are these stories true? Is there ever a moment like that? There'd have to be, right?
Yeah, but what if they say, no, they're not true? Then you say, well, I've never witnessed it. It seems kind of weird. But, you know, it's all hearsay.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I believe in my heart, and I don't know, again, why I'm so naive, but I believe in my heart if Meryl Streep knew specific instances that she would at this point go, you know, I had kind of heard of things, but I found it so difficult to believe. Now I feel terrible.
She seems an upstanding enough person to have done that, doesn't she?
She does. But, you know, she's an actress. What do we know?
Right. I think the strangest one in all of these was, remember the story came out a couple weeks ago that Gwyneth Paltrow was one of the people that he was harassing. And Brad Pitt, who was her boyfriend at the time, still worked with him. So if you're Brad Pitt and you know that he's kind of being inappropriate with your girlfriend, don't you go, you know, career is very important to me, but my personal life is even more important. I'm not comfortable working on a project with you. Wouldn't that have happened?
That seems weird he didn't do something.
I couldn't. If I was in that exact same situation and it was my wife or at the time girlfriend and I knew this was going on, as important as it was to have a business relationship with somebody, it wouldn't be worth it to me. I would just go, I couldn't feel good about myself or the project knowing that that was going on behind the scenes. I couldn't forgive and forget that easily.
Yeah, that's kind of bad.
It'd be really tough. All right, there's a lot of text coming in on this. Let's do this. Let's take a break and we can discuss this further or other things. You know how to reach us, right? We're at 312-981-7200. What are your thoughts? How do you handle something like this at an award show? It's going to be a very, very interesting evening on Sunday for the Golden Globes, the first major award show since the big Hollywood scandal. We'll talk about that and other things coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It is Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy has found some of the most important facts from this new Trump book that Michael Wolff has written. But very, very first, I just want to address two quick texts, Wendy, and then we'll get to those important parts of the Donald Trump book. Number one, a couple people are texting in saying Brad Pitt did do something, and he did. He threatened Harvey Weinstein. He said, if this continues, I'm going to get physical with you. He said it a lot more graphically than I just did. But the mere fact that that had already gone on in the background, that would have been enough to put me off any project I would have worked on with him or wouldn't have worked on with him.
And wouldn't you have kind of contacted the authorities, too?
Yes.
I don't know. That's...
Yes. Yeah.
You know, his career was just starting out, too.
Right.
It's your girlfriend, though.
Yeah. And then there's another one that said, I can't find it, but essentially it said, Bill, you knew about Bill Cosby, but you didn't say anything. Here's what I knew about Bill Cosby. In the years I did stand up, I heard dozens of stories over the years about Bill Cosby being a womanizer, that he had a roving eye, that he liked when he was on the road and his wife wasn't with him, he would find other women. I never heard any stories about him abusing women the way that he abused them, or that would have been the end of my love for Bill Cosby. And the night we met him, Wendy, one of the most incredible nights of my life. I can't speak for you, but to be in the same room.
Great.
Yeah. But once I heard these stories, I every single time I hear about Bill Cosby, I'm so torn because I loved the work that he did. I love the humor. I love the comedy. But the fact that he was that big of a monster to so many people. And I honestly didn't hear any of those stories. What I heard was that he was a womanizer. And that was as deep as it went. All right. So now this new book, Wendy, this Michael Wolff book is getting a lot of attention. And you have found some of the more interesting facts to come out of the book, huh?
Yeah. Now, CNN has put this together. So think of it as fake news if you'd like. But lots of things that have come out and some of the, I think they put a list together of the 10 most amazing lines from the book. And Trump said something. Here's a quote. This is bigger than I ever dreamed of. Trump told Fox News boss Roger Ailes a week before the election, quote, I don't think about losing because it isn't losing. We totally have won.
Interesting.
So he said that.
And what did he mean by we've totally won? Was it just the fact that they'd gotten as far as they got? Is that what he was referring
to? I believe so, yeah. It's like they made their mark whether they won the election or not.
Yeah.
But it's
interesting to me because he's a guy, he's very passionate about being the best at something, and to not win this election, you would think he would look at that as, oh, I got so close and didn't win. You would think that that would be a turnoff for him, but it didn't seem to be.
Yeah, but you know what? You can't predict how he would have acted. He might have been more annoying if he had lost.
Right.
You just don't know.
Because then he could have spent the next couple of years blaming whoever he wanted to blame on not winning.
Right. He won and still blames people.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I don't understand. Number two, the candidate, meaning Donald Trump and his top lieutenants, believe they could get all the benefits of almost becoming president without having to change their behavior or their worldview one whit. There was, in the space of little more than an hour, in Steve Bannon's not amused observation, a befuddled Trump morphing into a disbelieving Trump and then into a horrified Trump. But still to come was the final transformation. Suddenly, Donald Trump became a man who believed that he deserved to be and was wholly capable of being the president of the United States. Boy.
I imagine, here in my head, this is what I liken it to. I always thought it'd be cool to drive a helicopter, you know? Wouldn't that be fun to just have a helicopter and ride around in a helicopter? Although knowing that, if somebody said to me right now, hey, come with me, and they put me in the seat of a helicopter and just left me alone and said, go ahead, fly your helicopter, it'd be panic, 100% panic. You don't know how to fly a helicopter, except this is even bigger. It's the United States.
Yeah, but he's the guy who, I mean, part of confidence is believing in yourself, and who believes in himself more than himself?
Right, 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 right.
Another one, this was a real-life version of Mel Brooks' The Producers, where the mistaken outcome trusted by everyone in Trump's inner circle that they would lose the election wound up exposing them for who they really were.
Can I know most people are aware of The Producers, but let me quickly explain that.
Please do.
The musical The Producers is based on, it's two guys who realize that they'll make more money if they produce a flop because they've sold so many shares of this play that the only way they can succeed is if they make something that fails. I know that's hard. It's convoluted. It's hard to follow, but that's the premise of the show, of the play, The Producers. And that is, I mean, this is a grand scale production where that's exactly what happened.
This one is good. Trump did not enjoy his own inauguration. These are some things from the new Michael Wolff book. He was angry that A-level stars had snubbed the event, disgruntled with the accommodations at Blair House, and visibly fighting with his wife, who seemed on the verge of tears. Throughout the day, he wore what some around him had taken to calling his golf face, angry and peed off, shoulders hunched, arms swinging, brow furled, lips pursed.
And that's his golf face?
I guess.
What? Why would they? I mean, obviously, it's because it's the face he uses when he's golfing. But why? What's it? Just to show that this is not going the way I want it to go? Is that what they're shooting for?
Yeah, I guess.
All right.
Here's another one. Between themselves, Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner, they had made an earnest deal. If someone in the future, the opportunity arose, she would be the one to run for president.
The first
woman president Ivanka entertained would not be Hillary Clinton. It would be Ivanka Trump. That's interesting.
Yeah. Wow. Every one of these is interesting because you go, this isn't the way it's supposed to go. Right.
If you just
won the presidency, it should be nothing but jubilation because the odds of that are a million to one, a billion to one in this case. I still remember the day he announced he was running for president and everybody looked at each other and we all laughed like this guy hosts a reality show. He's not going to be the president of the United States. Actually, I was saying that the night of the election.
I know. He can't be
the president. That's the guy who just fired Gary Busey. He can't be the president.
It is pretty weird. And then finally here, CNN put this together, some 10 greatest moments from Michael Wolff's book that is supposedly going to be released next week, although Donald Trump's attorneys are trying to put a stop to that.
Wait. Before you get to this last one, I just want to comment on that. That's not the way things are supposed to work in a free society. If you know a book is coming out and you don't like the contents of that book, you shouldn't just say, well, that book should not come out. Whoever wrote that book is an idiot because it doesn't paint me in a very good picture. That book cannot be released. That's not the way it's supposed to work.
No, but nothing is going the way it's supposed to work. It's like Donald Trump has turned into Steven Seagal, where he is above the law for everything.
Right.
I mean, if these are untrue things, then you sue them for slander or libel or whichever it is in print. You can't stop it from coming
right.
out.
And by the way, Steven Seagal, perfect example, because he has that same golf face that we were just referring to with Donald Trump. He always, that's his acting face. Anytime he's in a movie, he's like, I got to use my acting face? All right, I'll use my acting face. All right, go ahead. What was the other one?
He has that same face when he's in the bathroom, though. I have to be honest with you. All right, and the final one, if Trump was not having his 6:30 dinner with Steve Bannon, then more to his liking, he was in bed by that time, 6:30, with a cheeseburger, watching his three scenes and making phone calls. The phone was his true contact point with the world to a small group of friends who charted his rising and falling levels of agitation throughout the evening and then compared notes with one another. So this seems pretty interesting.
I'm anxious to read it.
Whether you're a fan of his or not, I think we should look into it.
All right. So that book, Michael Wolff's book, comes out when, Wendy? It's next week?
I think it said next week unless it will be stopped at the presses, which it could be.
Has a president ever stopped a book from being published before? That's a first.
Many firsts here, Bill.
Yeah, there's a bunch of firsts. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick, a very, very quick break. We'll get some news for you. And then Dean Richards joins us. Dean has compiled his best lists of 2017, the best movies of the year, the worst movies of the year. We'll talk about that and also what's coming out at the box office this weekend. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points.
On a cold day like today, there's no real way to get warm than a nice hot cup of Dean Richards. Hi, Dean.
With marshmallows.
With mini marshmallows.
That's
with
an
little
insult.
Mini marshmallows.
Yo,
hi, Dean.
How are you, Dean? Happy New Year.
So nice to hear both of your voices, especially Wendy, because I've been following her recuperation on social media, and it sounds like everything's going great, but still nice to hear your voice.
Well, thank you. It's 4 weeks. My knee is 4 weeks old today, so I'm very excited. Having a birthday party later. And I'll be back in studio next week. And Bill will be gone.
Look a bit older than 2.5 weeks.
Clean living. That's what it is, Dean. Clean living.
That's what it is.
You're out in sunny California, right?
I am. And oh, man, you're talking about the cold. It's 62 degrees right here right now.
So. Yeah, but with the wind chill, it's like 60, right?
Yeah, I think so. I hate being that guy. I hate the person who's in like nice weather and goes, yeah, it's really cold. It's 70 degrees.
Right.
Where I am right now. I hate that person. So sorry I did that.
But you're there on business. You have no control. You have to go where the business
is. I am.
Yeah.
I am not having one bit of fun nor enjoying the beautiful outdoor weather.
Nope. Impossible.
Anyway.
Impossible.
No, I'm here strictly to do the the difficult task. I know a lot of people have jobs that take them outside. And,
yeah.
Lugging coal.
Digging ditches.
People lug coal and dug. Yeah.
Right. Working in the coal mines of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching movies and interviewing pampered movie stars.
Actually, in Chicago, it's working at the coal mine exhibit at the museum, but it's close enough.
That's right. And it costs extra to work in that coal mine, I found out when I went to the museum last year.
It does. Dean, I have to ask you, we were talking about this a little while ago, so you're an expert. We want your expert opinion. If you're hosting the Golden Globe Awards on Sunday, you certainly have to make mention of the scandal, the harassment scandal that has rocked Hollywood, but how do you do it in a way that is entertaining but still respectful to the people it affects?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be I think it's definitely going to be talked about. Seth Meyers is going to be the host. He certainly never backs away from any kind of controversial subjects, but maybe they'll make fun of some of the people who have been accused of those things, and that'll be their way of doing it. I think it's going to be not serious, but it's going to be a show of support for everything that's happening, making fun of the Harvey Weinsteins and Kevin Spacey's and the list of others. I would mention all the rest, but your show is over.
There's not enough time. I know.
Yeah. What a weird situation in Hollywood right now, and with these award shows coming up, how bizarre.
Yeah, the whole thing is bizarre. The thing that I've found most interesting and most encouraging is the latest campaign that's, I think it's called Show Me, that is an advocacy group for women who have been affected, who are not, high profile kind of people, because, anybody will tell you that this kind of thing goes on no matter what profession you're in. I was talking to somebody recently who was a waitress, and they said, you want to see some sexual harassment, come to the restaurant around 3 a.m. and getting pinched on the butt and slapped on the butt and, the kinds of things that go on in everyday places that have nothing to do with celebrities.
But Dean, that's the best thing about this advocacy group is they're not focusing only on Hollywood, especially not on Hollywood, but on other walks of life, on other professions. Yeah. That's a good move.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. That's what I mean. I mean, if there's any upside of this whole thing, and believe me, I'm glad that people are coming forward and saying all this. I'm exhausted from reporting new names every single day. I mean, it's something that needs to be done because people are coming forward. But I said from the very beginning, if there's any upside to this whole thing, it's that it's drawing attention to this and that people who are affected by this, whether they're famous or not, are going to be held accountable for what they're doing. So if it's changing things, you know, on an everyday basis, I think that's the only good thing that can come out of this.
Absolutely. Definitely. All right. Do me a favor. We don't have that much time and we want to get to these lists. You've done, as you do every year, the 10 best of the year and the 10 worst of the year. Just go on the best ones. Just go top five. What's the fifth best film of 2017?
The fifth best film. These are my favorites of the year. Number five, I chose. I probably should have had this list in front of me.
I have it. If you want a little help, Wonder Woman was fifth.
I have the worst list in front of me because
it's more fun.
Definitely more fun. But yeah, Wonder Woman was number five. Is it Shape of Water that was number four?
It was The Shape of Water. Yeah,
The Shape of Water. After that, and then I picked The Post, which is going to be opening in Chicago tomorrow. The Meryl Streep, Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg movie I chose as number three. Number two is the amazing Get Out, directed by Jordan Peele of Key and Peele fame. It's a great movie. It's fantastic. It's exciting. It's funny. And it's a powerful statement about race and racism. And the number one movie, not everyone's favorite movie of the year, but it was definitely mine in terms of overall movie making, spectacular movie making, Dunkirk, the World War II film. I think it's going to be hard to find anything that's more intricately put together than that one for 2017.
Dean, I saw Dunkirk last week, and Wendy and I discussed this on Tuesday just a little bit. It doesn't follow a regular narrative that most movies start out at the beginning and then go in the middle and then resolve it at the end. It kind of goes its own path. But a lot of people were confused by the storyline because there's things that happen and you go, wait, is that happening now? Did that happen in the past? When did that happen? You understand that parallel, right? It's hard. It's almost hard to figure out the storyline sometimes.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, a lot of people are so, you know, they don't understand how I could have picked that as the number one movie for that reason. But it's for that reason that I, you know, chose it to be the number one movie, because there are no conventional leading man or leading lady in this movie, as most movies have. The storytelling comes to you from several different perspectives. I think while you may be a little bit confused at the beginning of the movie, ultimately it winds up making sense. And I think it's rather brilliantly put together by the director, Christopher Nolan. So I found it fascinatingly extraordinarily put together. How did you both feel about it?
I liked it a lot. Wendy, you haven't seen it yet, right? I enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought it was really a beautiful movie to watch.
Yeah, I think, you know, just overall, I've seen it three times. I never go see movies three times, but I just, you know, I'm just completely bowled over by that movie. And there are lots of good movies out this year. There's, you know, the Darkest Hour, the Gary Oldman movie, which I think Gary Oldman will win the Academy Award for Best Actor, but that's a case where I think the acting is is far superior to the overall movie, which is not to say it's not a good movie, but that movie is powered on that singular performance. I love James Franco's The Disaster Artist. Again, I think it is powered by James Franco's performance and direction in that movie, but overall total movie making, in my opinion, you can't beat Dunkirk.
Dunkirk is the best of the best.
Dean going to see Dunkirk three times is almost like Jimmy Mack seeing Star Wars four times. You're one more and you're even.
Yeah. Did he like Star Wars, by the way?
He loved it. And there's a lot of dispute between people that don't like it, that do like it. And it's just, just watch the movie, you know?
Yeah. That's what I said. I also loved it very much, but I've noticed and I've gotten a lot of feedback from super Star Wars fans who are being so super critical about it.
Yep.
So I'm
and
glad,
that's driving
I'm
glad him nuts. And Bill liked it too. And
I
Bill
enjoyed
hasn't
it a lot.
The last couple.
Here's what's interesting to me is that Mark Hamill came out about a week or so after the movie came out, and really kind of didn't condemn the movie, but said, this Luke Skywalker isn't my Luke Skywalker. They did some stuff with him that I'm not pleased about. He's lessened up on those comments a little bit, but I thought that was really interesting that he would both promote the movie and say, eh, I'm not thrilled with the direction they took my character in.
I have yet to talk to any actor who was 100% thrilled with the final product. After things go through editing and, you know, changing, and piece of what they shot is different than what wound up in the movie. So I think that's sort of, you know, par for the course.
Yeah.
Often with motion pictures. I think it's great that there's so many different opinions on things. People get so defensive, and yep. Star Wars is a perfect example of that. My top 10 list of the year and my worst 10 list of the year, perfect example how people get so defensive if somebody has a different opinion. Some people like steak and some people don't like steak.
Right.
It's not the end of the world.
Right.
And that's what Jim's argument was. You know, watch the movie and either like it or don't, but don't complain about what it should have been. Just watch it and absorb it.
Yeah,
that's
a pet peeve that I have with critics sometimes, is that their analysis of the movie is how they would have made the
right.
movie. Just tell me what you think about the movie that you saw.
Exactly.
That's all I really want to know.
Don't you think, though, with something like with Star Wars in particular, because there's been so much time between the early days of the Star Wars movies to today, that fans have all this time to not just formulate their own storylines, but really to live the opinion of that character. And if it doesn't play out that way, you say, well, you had all that time to make it right, and it didn't play out that way. And that's the crime for that viewer anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely that. And also that, you know, certainly from the early Star Wars movies, and even the second set, what wound up being episodes 1, 2, and 3, we didn't really have social media to express ourselves and to, you know, yell at each other and
right.
browbeat each other about different opinions. So opinions are so much more readily available now. I don't understand, not only with movies, with a lot of things, the intolerance that people have for someone else's opinion.
I know.
Somebody else has another opinion. It's not the end of the world.
Right. That's so true. Dean Richards is here. We'll talk about the worst movies of 2017 and what's coming out this weekend next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Dean Richards is here. Dean, it's hard to believe there were even 10 bad movies in 2017. Are you sure?
I checked 3 times.
Yeah?
Just to make sure, because it's virtually impossible that there could be a clunker that comes out any time at all. But
right.
I did manage in my meticulous way to find 10 that I hated. That included the latest Halle Berry movie, Kidnap, that included Transformers, The Nut Job, Nutty by Nature, the animation movie, 50 Shades Darker, Baywatch, the Dwayne The Rock Johnson movie. My number 5 pick was Assassin's Creed, that you would think with its actors in it would have been fantastic. 2-time Oscar nominee Michael Fassbender, and also Academy Award winners Marianne Cotillard and Jeremy Irons. And this was just one of these overly convoluted, you know, kind of movies that came and went quickly. Thankfully, 2 hours of my life I'll never get back. A Bad Mom's Christmas may be the most aptly titled movie of the year, because bad is the word that summarized that, in my opinion. Some people loved it. I've been getting feedback from people saying that they absolutely loved A Bad Mom's Christmas. Again, something for everybody out there.
Dean, isn't there a trend, though? It's Bad Santa, it's Horrible Bosses. There was one with Cameron Diaz where she was a horrible teacher. That's like a formula now, right? It's just you take a profession, you take an adjective to describe how awful the profession is, and you have a movie.
Yeah, you find the very worst in it, and somehow you're supposed to, you know, celebrate the badness. I get it. I mean, it's R-rated irreverence. I get it. It's just not done very well.
Yeah.
It's not very clever. It's very predictable. I like irreverent movies also. This one, I think, was just so poorly written that, you know, there just nothing happened with it. Scarlett Johansson is in my number 3 spot. You know, a fantastic actress, but this movie that she had out called Ghost in the Shell, I'm still trying to figure out what this movie was about. I've spent most of my spare time trying to figure out what Ghost in the Shell was about. It was an excuse for, you know, for weird special effects, and that's really all I ever got out of this movie. Number two was a movie with a lot of actors that I really like, including Ice Cube and Charlie Day and Tracy Morgan. The movie was called Fist Fight, about two high school teachers who have a disagreement, and the way these two high school teachers settle it is by meeting in the parking lot after school for a fist fight, you know, which, you know, Steven Spielberg was going to take on that movie. Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep, he made a last-minute decision not to. But this was a movie where it was so poorly written. Good actors, nothing to do. I couldn't stand Fist Fight. Some people liked it. And similarly, my number one worst movie of 2017, some people liked. I thought it was awful, the most awful.
I hope it's the same one that I think.
What's your guess, Wendy?
Chips.
Was it
Sausage Party?
Oh, Wendy goes with Sausage Party. Dean goes with Chips.
I think Sausage Party may have been the year before, but I'd have to check the dates on that. But I thought Sausage Party was actually kind of funny.
You did.
Chips, the movie adaptation of the TV show Chips with Dax Shepard and Michael Pena, again, such bad writing, such horribly bad writing in that movie. I was embarrassed for everybody who was involved in it. In this movie where Chips winds up standing for cheap, horrible, idiotic, predictable, and stupid.
Dean, when they showed the preview for it, I was in a theater and they showed the preview for Chips and the audience booed the preview.
Wow.
That's bad.
How about that? How about that?
Yeah,
now, did you notice that two of your top, or I should say your bottom 10 movies, are movies based on shows from the 80s? Baywatch and Chips.
Yeah, exactly.
So why doesn't Hollywood realize we've had enough of that? We're not going to fall for that again.
Yeah, why doesn't Hollywood realize that if you're going to make a movie that you need to have something more than a concept of let's remake a popular show, and that you need to have a script that that makes sense, that's somewhat original, where there are some interesting things happening, that just remaking a popular television show isn't enough to carry a franchise. That said, again, like I said before, I've gotten emails. When I put out my best and worst list of the year,
people are mad at you.
The most reaction, people get mad at me because, you know, that I'm picking a movie that they liked. It's okay. You can still like it.
Right.
I'm just saying these are not for me. That's all. When there's Sausage Party.
Not when there's Sausage Party out there to be rented.
Those are 2 hours I cannot get back. And my teenage boys kept going, did you get to the end yet? And I'm like, no. And they just said, wait.
It gets better.
It was unreal.
It gets better. Here's some good news, though, Dean.
Like Sausage Party? Did the boys like Sausage Party?
No, even they thought it was stupid.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
I wanted to love it.
Here's the good news. One of Dean's top movies.
A little insight into my brain.
One of Dean's top movies, The Post, opens on Friday. Nothing but good things about this movie, right?
Yeah. I gave it a Dean's List A. I loved it, and I expect that it's going to win several awards at the Golden Globes this weekend. Steven Spielberg directs it. Tom Hanks stars. Meryl Streep stars. Bob Odenkirk. A whole list of an amazing, amazing ensemble in the real life story of the Washington Post's decision to publish the Pentagon Papers back in 1971. It's such a well made movie, such a intriguing drama. Even though, if you're familiar with the history of the Pentagon Papers, you know how it ends. You know the ending of the movie, but it's so well done. But I think even in a bigger sense. This movie is so relevant and so poignant right now because it's about freedom of the press. It's about the press's responsibility to tell the truth to the public, and for a lot of people, that's something which rings true today. So I think it's well done. It's very entertaining and very poignant all at the same time. So run to see that one. Another movie called Insidious is opening this weekend. And I did not screen that one, but it's the third in the Insidious trilogy, kind of a supernatural thriller, I'm told.
Dean, is it when you have people like Steven Spielberg, Meryl Streep, and Tom Hanks, it's nearly impossible to make a bad movie, right?
I think so. I mean, I think they're all pretty great. It certainly has happened before, not with this particular trilogy of actors, but it's happened before where there's been, you know, like all the credentials in the world and a movie doesn't
pan
out very well, but it doesn't happen very often. And this particular movie is just really, it's such a powerful, important drama. I can't recommend it enough, but so we'll see what's going to happen this weekend because, you know, you have movies like Three Billboards Over Ebbing, Missouri, which could win. And, you know, the Golden Globes are split up between dramas and comedy musical,
right,
even though many of the movies in that category are neither comedy nor musical. How they split it up, it really has to do with how the producers decided to categorize that particular movie and how they thought they had the best chance of winning an award. But I expect that The Shape of Water also will be a big winner. That's got the most nominations going into Sunday's Golden Globe Awards.
Excellent.
Exciting.
Yeah. Dean, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Nice to talk to you both. Happy New Year, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks. That's Dean Richards. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Stay here. Bill and Wendy, WGN.